Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in wherever you are tuned in from. As usual, this time of the day, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we're here until the hour of 6.
Oh, yes, guys, you are in our company.
I'm
jacked up on coffee, flowing on water.
Okay, I'm jacked up on peanut butter and peanuts. Man, I'm beginning to think I'm eating an unhealthy amount.
You could be a renewable power station with all that, all that peanuts, Helmut.
Like I eat all my bread. You know, I prefer to eat my bread with peanut butter. Yeah. And then when I find the, when I find the roasted ones, I'm like, I need to get one. And then yeah. I end up getting two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a good thing I'm not allergic.
Yeah, but the downside also, Helmut, is I discovered most a little bit later in life the reason why I had a growth spurt is because I was a peanut butter and jam sandwich. What do they call it? Michelin 5-star,
Deluxe 5000.
Deluxe 5000, preparer and consumer.
Yeah.
And if you're a kid like myself that at a young age you realize that here's a shortcut for food, you just need two slices of bread, some margarine, okay, not too much margarine, it sort of like changes the texture and the taste, but you need, ample supply of all those particular ingredients to make the Michelin 5-star peanut butter and jams and apricot jam sandwich. And I was flowing from there with Ricoffee, Nestle Ricoffee, and things were just high. Until I discovered, up until a specific part, you just let it go. But I had a growth spurt because peanuts are so nutrient rich.
Yeah.
If you don't want to eat meat, not that I'm saying you should go and drastically change your diet, guys. Nor is Eagle FM going to take any responsibility for any drastic changes that you decide to take upon yourself in 2025 with your diet. But let's just say, you decide to go and eat just peanuts and drink
water. Advice of not eating meat. I'm not taking that advice from a dietitian with 10 PhDs.
Not even from your house doctor.
Nah.
So even if you just,
I will have to be deathly allergic.
Even if you decide to just live on peanuts for the next year, peanuts are so rich in nutrition.
Huh? They're like honey.
Yeah, they are like honey. They're natural products, but they pull everything from the soil. That's what makes the plant also so valuable.
Yeah.
That the fruit of the plant is literally in the soil on the root system.
Directly.
So it's a shallow root system. It's like potatoes. It doesn't go through to the leaves and the stem and the stuff above. That's also why you get trained if you're dealing with potatoes and legumes like peanuts and the other ground nut family. You need to ensure that the thing doesn't flower.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, what?
Because if the thing flowers, the nutrients from the soil went to the flowering.
So it's a offspring, natural inclination towards continuation of the generation.
Yeah.
So no wonder.
You want the potato, you want the peanut. So in some cases, they teach you. And those are sort of like the weird things that one needs to practice, that not all fruit bearing plants should be allowed to flower. For example, with an orange tree and with an apple tree, you will be told, allow the plant to flower because that's the process in which the germination supposedly happens because
the fruits,
you need a bee or another kind of like a hummingbird or another kind of a flying species to take seeds from one part or nectar from one plant, let's say from the male plant to the female plant or from the female plant to the male plant, to help the germination process go on. Because in one scenario, I think it's with apple trees, after the plant has matured to become a tree, you first get a flower. Yeah. Or it's with an orange tree. You first get a flower. And then the next year, if you have male, female, because you gotta plant them like that, you will possibly get the female plant carrying the
I have so many questions.
Yeah, it's each plant is different as you go ahead in terms of that unique discussion, which obviously brings us up into our discussion, which is literally based upon the opposite of agricultural, you know, and nutritional based conversation, but actually based upon what has been going on for the past 2 weeks in the country. There's been an upstream petroleum national local content policy public engagements going on. This involves the Office of the President. This involves the National Planning Commission. This involves, I think it's Ministry of Mines and NAMCOR officials. And then obviously the regional councils of the regions that have engaged. And it actually brings us squarely, dear listeners, to our discussion because Helmut and I, we've started on this since November last year. I think it's the specific reason why we avoided the oil and gas conference that took place last month. Because we didn't talk about that. Because we observed that this particular engagement was also kicking off.
You know, this is why I think, I'm going to go back to yesterday's point that I made about reading beyond newspaper article headlines. Yeah. I'm not saying don't follow what's going on, you know, the updates that are coming to you from the media. After all, I'm in that industry. I'll be shooting myself in the foot.
Yeah.
And also in the bank account. Now the thing to understand here is that I just like the speeches that are given, you know, when these events are being held. And I think the part that I enjoy the most is comparing different information from different sources.
Mm.
Now, the consultations for me, consultations, especially if, for a country that is working towards more like, always promoting transparent leadership. And after all, in every democratic society or every society that calls itself democratic, it's always important to sort of like, to make it loud and clear that there is this type of transparent communication going on between the between the leadership and the and those that are being led.
Mm.
Now, so which is why I found I found it interesting, not in a negative way, that the Office of the President had its has its presence. After all, they like spearheading the whole thing. Now, then you just sit and try to look at to look through it like these consultations are taking place at the right time.
Yeah,
they are taking place at the right time because the baseline the oil and gas baseline survey that you and I've been through like over and over, we like to reference over and over again, coming from Deloitte Namibia, put the projection of production in terms of oil, because you first have to explore all these surveys, you have to explore and then set up the infrastructure before you get to production.
Mm.
Now, the production is somewhere, the production is somewhere between 2030 and basically, let me just say beyond 2030, somewhere between 2030, 2040 then.
Yeah.
Now, a full scale production can even be, way over that in terms of time period.
Yeah.
So the question here, the question here that is worth answering, I think, when it comes to looking at this whole, this whole consultation, which kicked off on the 1st of September in Lutheritz. And just from the first, from that consultation, the attendees pointed out just what the consultations were set in place to find out.
Yeah.
Try to assess, which is how much skills that that will enable, how much skills are present out there that will enable, and these skills must be in Namibians, and that these skills must be enable Namibians to participate in the oil and gas sector.
Yeah.
Now, the gentleman from Carlo McLeod from the State House, from the presidency,
presidency.
There was a brilliant choice of words there, because he didn't say the president, he said the presidency.
Mm.
So it's the office, not
Not that that, yeah. Exactly. But obviously it,
throw it all in there.
Because he's obviously a special advisor.
A special advisor.
Yeah.
Yeah, according to him, he is, what's this? Yeah, the special advisor to the presidency on oil and gas, and also the deputy head of the upstream petroleum unit.
Yeah.
So he's advising the presidency on oil and gas, and this is an industry that he's directly involved with.
Yeah.
So he's an expert in his field at this point.
Yeah, he is. He is the humdinger, Hamoud.
Oh dear.
He's the humdinger. You just mentioned the word, which is the humdinger in our discussion, which is technically being the discussion that they were citing in their public engagement, is the word upstream.
Yeah.
So upstream obviously looks at extraction in many cases. When we look at extraction or the role at the extraction level in the IBS, the industry baseline study that was brought out last year, obviously sponsored by the Ministry of Mines and Energy, developed and done in partnership, or specifically by Deloitte Namibia. Mm-hmm. This particular study itself, which is a 586-page document, just in its summary of the key finding, which is literally page 6, it outlines the key findings. But if you drop down to the local content impact assessment scenario, let's talk about the job scenario, because the chairperson of the Karas region, that Mr. being Mr. Joseph Isaac and Mr. McLeod himself, and then the lady that spoke in between them, I think she's from NAMCOR, they both cited they continuously mentioned the phrase local business content, participation in the value chain or supply chain scenario. So they didn't expand much, nor say at the start of that discussion about jobs immediately. They just went like, you know, local content and helping businesses and local
businesses. The whole subject of local content and how Namibian is going to benefit from the oil and gas industry, from the consultations that have been held so far.
Yeah.
Has been approached, if you listen to the consultations, has been approached at a very broader spectrum. Yeah. They are basically approaching it from a spectrum, not just by direct employment, but you know, they also did mention things like catering.
Mm.
You know, if there's catering that's required in something that's, in something that's involved, that involves oil and gas, how does a Namibian benefit from that? Yeah. That's when you see that the benefits being discussed here goes beyond the direct employment
Generate the jobs first.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, it's number 5 of the key summary findings that was outlined in that study, because it's the study that the Ministry of Mines and Energy is working with, because this is an industry baseline study that was completed, survey and study that was completed of the Namibian upstream oil and gas industry, so that all of us know that. The local content impact assessment, they showed the first scenario that they picked up on was that a 5.8% GDP growth can be envisaged with at least 7,000 jobs created in the production phase alone. In another scenario, which they call FPSO, I just didn't pick up on that specific acronym.
Okay, before you go to that next part, go back to that production part.
The first one, in terms of the 5.8% and at least 7,000. Okay, so they call it floating production, storage and offloading. That's the FPSO that they use, the term that they use. So the first floating production and storage offloading scenario, they're at least envisaging 5.8% GDP growth and 7,000 jobs to be created just in production phase.
Okay. This is in production phase.
Yeah. These are the guys standing there at the oil well, at the rig.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Associated
there. Just a quick reminder, over 270 kilometers away.
From the shoreline.
Yeah. Even if you...
From Ludritz. Yeah, from Ludritz, yeah.
Basically from the shore.
Yeah.
Yeah. 200 kilometers.
Almost 300 kilometers.
Now, almost 300, yeah, it's 270 something. Yeah. Almost 300 kilometers. Now, when you look at this, it's why, again, I think these consultations are super important.
Yeah.
Because We want to make sure, okay, of course, it's important to make sure that Namibians benefit from the oil and gas while making sure that they are equipped with the right skills, not to bring, deep sea horizon disaster. So, an oil platform, I think one thing that is not explained a lot we are not talking about a lot, because I'm sure a lot of us know this. As long as you have the internet and you watch a bunch of documentaries, you know that an oil platform is a very dangerous place.
Yeah, also very expensive.
So it's very expensive. Not just because to travel there, it's not like you can drive your way to an oil platform.
Yeah,
you need a helicopter.
Yeah,
that's one. Two, you can imagine this is an oil platform that is what's one thing that's mostly found underground with oil? Natural gas.
Yeah,
extremely flammable.
Yeah.
So you want to, I know that when it comes to the extractive industry, like safety wise on the job, safety wise, they take that very, very seriously, even if it's an onshore operation.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone that have visited any mining site or any extractive industry site knows just how strict they are when it comes to safety.
Yep.
Now, imagine an offshore one. Because if they say, God forbid, they say disaster, you can't just, jump over the fence and run away. You can't. First of all, it's elevated way above sea level,
yeah,
like literally above the water, that even if you jumped, the safety is not guaranteed that you're going to land it safely. Plus, if it's 200 kilometers away from the shore and it's at night, even if you're a good swimmer, I don't think you can swim 200 kilometers.
Plus, that water is very cold.
Uh-huh. And it's pitch black dark.
Yeah. I saw the photos of the Venus, the Total Energy Venus, what do they call it? The
Venus oil well?
No, the environmental impact analysis, the information, the discussion they had start of this year on Earth Day, because literally it was on Earth Day. I think it was on 1st of May, like 4 or 5 May. And they had this public open day alongside the NAMCOR officials.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the photo and I looked at the photos and the stuff. And literally the environmental consulting agency,
mm-hmm,
the private sector agency had to literally go and swim to go. And they had to send a device underwater,
mm-hmm,
to go look at what kind of animal life and plant life is on the seabed.
Yeah.
And assess it and see what's going on there. And potentially what other kinds of, when they do an EIA is they go and assess, what kind of human activity would be impacted, what kind of marine life activity would be impacted. For example, like, are there any particular, breeding grounds, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating thing to know, because the Namibians that were sitting in the audience, one of them was obviously also a political leader who was also there. People were asking that discussion about, they were only concerned about the 10% ownership dimension. That's all that the Namibians were worried about. Why are we sitting with 10%?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad, even though it's like 7 or 5 months later after this particular discussion of May, and Mr. Sherborne answered that question for us in our discussion when we looked at his state of the Namibian economy analysis, or what do you call it? The guide to the Namibian economy, but more like the state of it.
Yeah, the presentation.
Where he explained. And this is also how many economists could not transition the message that came out from the Shell write-off of the $400 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now imagine if Namibia had to fork up $200 million. And we now had to write that off. Who was now supposed to be dragged in front of ACC to be investigated. Yeah, why are we writing off 200 million? Couldn't we have salvaged something?
Yeah, you're right. That would be another.
That would have been the next headlines to take place here in Namibia, Helmut. Literally. That would have been the headlines here. I'm now putting myself now in that position.
200 million. Wait.
Dwight is to be dragged in front of the ACC investigations, whatever.
To explain, 200 million in US dollars, how much is that?
4 billion.
Oh, okay. Wait, what?
4 billion US, 4 billion Namibian dollars. Times 20, or times 18. It's a lot of money, Amo.
No, look, anyone that, you know, but it turns out they are also not a lot, because Mr. Sheban asked that question during his presentation. How many of you have read my book?
Yeah.
Because the 400...
There were like literally three people.
Yeah.
When I spoke to him on Friday,
yeah,
he said literally there were like two or three. He discounted Graham Hopwood and the...
Yeah, because wasn't he like the editor?
Yeah, he was the editor and the CEO of Rand Merchant Bank, the guys that own... FNB, overall. What's the guy's name? Mr. Galloway or something like that. He discounted Mr. Galloway and said, no, you can't, you don't count specifically. And then it was just one other person in the audience. No one else read his book.
Okay,
besides you and me, because obviously we are outside of that, but we weren't in the same exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, it's in the same book where there's a very nice story of how we try to start kickstart a very enthusiastic mining enterprise with $1 million. Namibian. now, here I was thinking I was the comedian. Now,
That sentence will always be golden.
I know.
Always be golden.
Now, here's the thing. Every time, in the very same book, he sort of like tried to summarize like the level of investment that's required for one to, two things. One, the level of investment, and basically like the caveat on top of that is the cost that comes with that level of investment, and playing around, playing jump rope with the chance and probability type of statistics of whether or not what you are putting money in is going to yield an anticipated return on investment.
Yeah,
yeah, and then he basically goes on to explain that the thing is, even when you are pouring in all these millions and millions of dollars, although the amount that is he's specific about is the $300 million of the seismic survey. Now, if you look at the baseline oil and gas Deloitte survey, you will see Deloitte report, you will see that the seismic survey is the beginning of this whole thing.
Yeah.
That's where you're spending, and I think this is this is like three operations that you have to carry out in that primary, more like initial, more like initial exploration phase. One of those three phases, that's the one that requires 300 million Namibian dollars, just one. By the time that you get to production, you have poured in so much money that it's painful to reach the conclusion that Shell reached, that, you know what, this well, it doesn't have any economic viability.
Yeah.
So, well, the best thing to do is just to, well, cut our losses and call it a day.
Plus, also, Helmut,
400 million.
I know I'm bringing you back to the start of where we started off with in our introduction based upon, these particular public engagements that have been going on now. 7,000 jobs sounds like nothing, sounds very small, in terms of the greater drop or the greater, economic activity. 7,000 jobs at the start, dear listeners, is actually a very good scenario just from one economic activity, even though it's in mining. And once again, it'll be in mining because it'll be mining still. And this is just at the production phase, meaning people associated to production. So it's nothing to do with even people participating or businesses participating in distribution even.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, the fourth floating production and storage offloading scenario, the fourth FPSO, they're looking at 21% GDP growth and 26,000 jobs being created in the production phase as well. So you can literally see that from the start, when literally the resource is now being extracted, we're going to see growth from 7,000 potentially to 26,000 potentially, which sounds grand. It sounds awesome. It sounds wonderful. But then just at the top of the situation, we sit with a scenario known as, where's that sentence? Just above it, the workforce assessment, just above the local content impact assessment. We sit with a scenario, dear listeners, of some critical qualifications for technical jobs that were identified as being insufficient in terms of volume. But before we continue, guys, we've got a short ad break coming up. We'll come back right after that.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The time is just a minute past the hour of five. For those of you that just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. This is a Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we're here until the hour of six. And today's discussion is the ongoing consultations on oil and gas. Because the question that's being asked basically, and these consultations are running until the 17th of September. That means keep your eye on them. They are going to be in your region at some point between now and that time. Now, if I continue saying this, I may as well just send them an invoice. But the point is,
Do you think the presidency will pay your invoice?
I know, right? May as well just send them an invoice.
No, send it to the regional council.
I know.
And then you will wait forever for that invoice.
That invoice is going to come in 2030.
When you've probably already been pulling, getting pension payouts from somewhere else.
Big time. Yeah. Now, the thing is, this is basically the right time to ask all these questions. And there are experts that are taking the podium to answer your questions. You know that 10% question that one. Now it's time to ask that one. And what is offshore? What's upstream and what's downstream?
Offshore and onshore.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds more like a Panama Papers situation.
I know. Panama Papers. Yeah. Now, all this thing. This is basically the level of transparency that we always ask for in terms of governance.
Yep.
And this is the level of transparency that's covering the whole, just in one sector, running around the whole country, to try and share with you and I information about what's taking place or what are the plans with regards to this particular sector, in this case, the oil and gas industry. Now, skills.
Yeah, so at the skills in the industrial baseline survey report of 2024, remember, guys, this report technically does, they did everything before this current road trip situation, which is currently going on, kicked off. So it's literally done. They did the assessment. It's the big daddy of reports that you cannot ignore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as impactful as the labor force survey and the census report, because if you put all three together, you can technically extrapolate, how much workforce you would need just for the oil and gas sector alone. And remember, this potentially could be multiple oil companies or oil extracting companies. That is the assumption, because that's how they, what you call it, they balloon the 26,000 jobs to that level. So it is based upon an assumption that everyone hits the same jackpot.
All the companies that are exploring
in the same orange basin. Exploring in the same orange basin.
Well, we learned from Shell that jackpot is not jackpotting.
And remember, Shell has got multiple
wells.
Yeah, wells. Yeah. Remember from the analysis that Sherborne highlighted in his discussion 2 weeks back. They've got multiple wells.
Yeah.
And it's one well that they had to write off of 400 million. One well that they had to say this is economically not feasible. I think it's from 1 from 7 or 1 from 6.
You.
So, on the workforce assessment discussion, the IBS report cited some critical qualifications for technical jobs were identified as being insufficient in terms of volume. Specific oil and gas qualifications do not exist in country. So this means, if we get back to the green hydrogen youth discussion, Helmut, that you and I had back in last month.
Yeah.
Yeah? Remember what the VTC, the vocational trainer, the guy that was...
The gentleman that was trained in Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the gentleman that was the engineer, the other one that came and stood next to him that highlighted to us that they would need wind technicians. Namibia, yeah. for the renewable energy sector.
Yeah.
Namibia needs to start bringing in a course to train people in becoming a wind technician, because you can repurpose an engineer to become a wind technician, but then that person would be highly paid. And then you getting into a wind technician course situation, you technically would not make it, because there's an engineer being repurposed to become a wind technician. And technically, yeah, you don't want the engineers out in the field. The engineers were supposed to be the guys in the offices drawing up the plans, doing the calculations, while the technician is the one executing said particular plans and calculations.
I'm sure some of them won't mind gallivanting in your words, but that's going to cost a lot of money.
I know, especially like the construction guys. They love being on site everywhere, every day.
You know, and fancy helmets and...
Coming and pointing at...
Yeah, they're just pointing. That's
yeah, usually the other construction workers and the bricklayers are like, what are these guys doing? I heard a story in modern... Because I constantly see the memes. On the construction site, the most hated person is apparently the architect, because the architect loves having...
You're the one that created wild, the nightmare in the first place.
has wild creative ideas of being a Picasso in the construction industry, and everyone, and all the bricklayers and the plumbers and the electricians are like, no one has the material that you want.
Look,
execute the design that you are thinking of.
There are a bunch of memes about engineers and architects out there. One of them starts with
apparently these guys, they've got a little feud.
They do. Yeah. One of them starts with an architect going, talking to a group of engineers. Yeah, right. Mm. This is how it's gonna start. Let's assume gravity doesn't exist.
I saw that meme.
And engineers are like, yeah, but it does exist.
But it does exist. That's why we're standing on the surface of the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Let's just assume gravity doesn't exist.
And this roof needs to stand on its side.
Uh-huh.
But it does not work that way.
Oh no, those guys have a field that is, has its own a flood of memes all over the internet.
Yeah, it's a community situation.
Yeah, it's a whole community.
But you should see the one about the machinists, the engineers, the machinists, the engineers, and the designers. I'm not talking about graphic designers. I'm talking about the literal plan design, those guys. Apparently, there's also a little feud happening there, because apparently the engineers want a part that the machinist has to translate and know, do they have the machine that can make the thing? And the designer just designs.
Yeah, they're just like, you know what? The way that I had a dream about this thing is supposed to work like this. Now, you figure out how to build it.
And then the engineer goes like, no, don't worry. Just go with the flow. And then the machinist is like, are you guys forgetting about me? I'm the one that has to make the thing for you.
Literally bring it to life.
Yeah. Now, apparently, Helmut, we need to also start training or producing machinists.
Yeah.
Germany, South Korea, Japan, even South Africa has got a whole bunch of machinists. Machinists, dear listeners, if you don't know, they're the guys that produce the machine that makes the part, or even the machine that has to make the machine that you want, that makes the part that you want. Because we've got people asking questions about AI, like yesterday at that hyphen skill census mapping discussion, the youth guy that was there started talking about, start, you know, also incorporating AI into your programming. I'm like, dude, there are certain skills that we don't have. You're asking about AI, goedersen. Leave the AI for the surfers in tech, in, you know, Silicon Valley.
In Mr. Sheban's presentation, he did point out that one well that he specifically mentioned, that's the Venus oil well, is over 270 kilometers away from offshore.
Yeah.
And from the surface of the water to the seabed, it's 3 kilometers. And then from the seabed to where the oil is another 3 kilometers.
Yeah.
So from the seabed to where the oil is, that is a, you know, that's a drill bit that's gonna do that, but to fix anything that's going on in the sea, to fix anything that's going on the seabed, you need divers
and submarines.
Now,
submersible.
Exactly. Yeah, you need submersible submarines because the pressure is, you know, gets insane the deeper you go.
Yeah.
Now, all this. They have to decompress in, you know, in between sessions. They need very specialized equipment, which I don't think we don't have to worry about because, well, the companies that are doing operations, you can bet they have these equipments in place. But take for example, if you want to participate in an environment like that, you will have to obviously go through training because you are living in very, very small and somewhat confined spaces that you are working with. And if they just send you 3 kilometers to the bottom of the ocean and you do all this welding and stuff, and then quickly yank you out on the surface, you're gonna die. You need time to decompress.
Here's the
now
word.
All this training is needed, at which I'm going, you know what? I'm gonna stick to comedy. You guys go there.
Do you know what's the worst?
And make the money.
Yeah. Do you know what's the worst part of this? There's a guy that I used to do. We studied marketing together for our diplomas at before it was NASP, now Polytechnic, and he is one of the guys that run oil rig training courses at Walvis Bay. He's from Angola. Another guy. I also knew, I incidentally bumped into him at the start of this year in Grovemore. Also, he's also Angolan. He studied business administration also at the same institute like myself.
Yeah.
He also works for another, oil and gas company in Angola, but he was on some sort of a training, if I can call it like a excursion to the Middle East. And he was also invited into Namibia on a similar training excursion at the coast as well at Walvis Bay, because now they've got to, this whole discussion also includes training Namibians to dive for the oil.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the thing, Helmut. To dive without any dive gear.
Yeah.
The deepest that a human can last.
Specialized equipment.
Yeah. The deepest a human can last is like without the gas, the oxygen tank and the mask and the stuff. Yeah. Is 60 meters before your lungs can crush or your lungs burst or you start poisoning from your lungs inside. You know.
Pressure?
No,
to build up or something?
No, it's because since you are not breathing in, now instead of you getting in new oxygen and you breathing out carbon dioxide. Now the carbon dioxide and the oxygen is just mixing in your lungs and it starts then getting back into your blood system.
Bad idea.
And it's technically in a way poisoning you, you know, in that scenario. And then there's obviously also the water pressure dimension that you mentioned a little bit earlier, in terms of that you need a submersible vehicle to be able to get as deep as possible. Remember, we mentioned a depth of 3,000 meters, which is 3 kilometers.
Yeah.
2,000 feet is not 3 kilometers, please, guys. You can dive at least 610 meters as a human. But this is obviously in an assisted manner, meaning you've got technology assisting you, because apparently in 2006, a chief Navy diver known as Daniel Jackson of the US, but before that, ad break.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Divers.
Divers. So, just to set the record, guys, there was obviously a US Navy guy that back in 2006, he was using assisted technology, in a simulation, not computer simulation, literally a real life simulation in a control environment, and he could dive 610 meters. However, the Guinness World Record recognizes a scuba diver. A scuba diver is someone that has the oxygen tank on the back with the mask, with the other mask situation. And that is the deepest apparently a human can dive, is 332 meters below the surface of the sea. And this was recorded in the Red Sea in Egypt. And it took him nearly 15 hours to go back to the surface. This gentleman, it was a guy by the name of Ahmed. It took approximately 12 minutes for Ahmed to reach his record depth of 332 meters down the Red Sea in Egypt and nearly 15 hours to go back to the surface. I don't know how
that doesn't make sense.
That doesn't make sense, but yeah, this is.
Is it one of those things where you will have to be really, really, really slow?
Yeah. Or probably because of so much. Because there is not much light in the environment that you are just moving very slow.
Being broke have saved me from a lot of trouble I know I'm doing that. Oh yeah, I think I know someone that likes, you know, to dive, that could get an excellent job scuba diving in these oil and gas opportunities.
Yeah.
Your boss. Now, moving on.
Yeah, it's Helmut that said that. Please. The words came out of his mouth. I'm just an acquaintance. I'm just an accomplice, you know, a silent partner.
Deny. Now, Look, the thing is, I think that's a very the part of employment, more like the definition of the employment that's being, you know, that we have the way that we have to look at employment when we're talking about different sectors, of which oil and gas is one.
Yeah,
is beyond directly being employed by a specific company that's directly involved in the extraction of the resources.
Yeah,
which is why I think bring up catering for me. And, you know, all this, you know, accommodation, transport, yeah, all those things.
Welding, maybe. Because you get more specialized welding. So at least if you're a company, if you're a welding, if you're someone that has been doing welding professionally, even if it's just you, one man, one woman, solo situation, you can at least skill up.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Dwight. Now, I know that a lot of guys here, you know, those of you that do welding, at some point maybe you worked on a tender to fix someone's gate. As if you can't fix a gate.
That's not a tender, Helmut. I know a guy that knows a guy that knows a guy. That's not a tender.
Well, it's called a tender.
A tender is a through pass.
Huh?
A tender is a through pass.
Well,
you see, I'm using yellow bench. Yeah, polytechnic yellow bench, you know, terminology, you know, in terms of where we try to identify the shortcuts in economic activities that don't really transmit or translate towards the best in business integrity that you can think of.
My point is, if you can't weld a gate properly, you need to up your skills for you to participate in welding on this platform.
Usually that just means, you know, you appoint someone, 7-year-old boy, to hold on to the other end of the gate so that you can do the job properly, you know.
I mean, that thing falls on them, the parents are gonna kill you.
Nah, that wasn't me. He was just hanging there.
He was just chilling. A 7-year-old, really? That's diabolical. Yeah. Looking at employment in any of in all these sectors, and I think this is not just true for oil and gas. It's also true for all the sectors, of which green hydrogen again is one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to be like everyone is going to be directly employed. Like, that would be a terrible way of looking at it. You have to understand that a lot of people that will be directly involved in the, you know, be directly involved in this, in the extraction process, production, and all this. There are people that also use other services like accommodation.
Yeah.
So
it'll be tourism as well. Meaning like it's like a spillover that you can potentially see into other sectors. So obviously, like the analysis we did, Helmut, of the tourism sector, was it like 3 months back, where it cited, you know, there was an increase in the business tourists that were using the conferencing facilities. Decent point,
One point that was made by Mr. McLeod in this discussion was when he basically asked himself a rhetorical question, then he goes ahead to answer it, and I'm paraphrasing him. The question he asked was, what is local content policy? Then he goes on to say, in simple terms, it's about ensuring that that Namibians are not left behind.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to point out that the government's responsibility or way of ensuring that oil and gas companies employ and train. Then he goes on a very an extended list than the one that I summarized here, to employ and train Namibians to ensure that ensuring that they directly benefit in the from the oil and gas industry. And the interesting word he uses is that to ensure that the promises being made with regards to the benefits coming out of the oil and gas industry are felt by an ordinary Namibian. Like, at this point, saying that employment will be created is not enough.
Mm.
The question is, do you have skills that will meet the requirement of this employment? I think that's where the training now. That's where these consultations are now coming in. Why are these guys not paying us again? Because we're just here marketing them. Now,
I'd like to send them an invoice. You're right, Helmut. Let's send them invoices.
I know. Right.
No, but here's the thing. These particular regional engagements.
Yeah.
Did you see what was the label of them? They're consultations.
Yeah.
And the lady that spoke between Mr. McLeod and the regional chairperson, Mr. Isaac, the lady that said, you know, access the local, the national local, what the content policy, digitally on a, through that QR code situation. How much? Yeah. It's still in draft format. All the things that I could find digitally. It's still in draft format. So these are still consultative levels for a policy document.
Yeah.
I would have loved to hear this. I would have loved to see the scenario of there's like three draft policy documents. One in terms of updating the Oil and Gas Act or legislation, meaning asking Namibians, what do you want to see from, you know, to be protected under the legislation? For example, like the discussion that, you remember the National Arts Council consultation, the one where...
Is it Section 19?
Where we made fun of the Section 19 scenario. But in that one, the National Arts Council was asking literally the stakeholder, what do you guys want to see? They didn't show up with a policy document. They said, we have to change the act. Because UNESCO said the only way you can improve on your sector...
We want to help you, but... Yeah.
But change your act. Update your act. Come with the times. What was it? 24 years later, which is now 25 in this year, 2025. You guys need to update your stuff. If you want to literally access the potential that your creative sectors have, that your arts and culture sectors have, that the cultural tourism that I went on a whole road trip with wishes to tap into. But this act has to be updated. And that's not what we heard from this engagement, Helmut. The Namibians weren't asked, what do you want to see being protected in terms of legislation? Yeah, you still wanted to say, Helmut, sorry.
No, I just wanted to point out our favorite, more like my favorite part of the, you know, of this industry baseline survey. But before that,
let's go for a break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. The time is 27 past the hour of 5, and you're still with Homerun here on Eagle FM. And where are we? My favorite part of this, baseline report. Generally, according to page 20 of that 586-page report.
Hey man, at least it's not a 1,000-page midterm, you know, expenditure review.
Yeah.
Document that just tells you graphs and lines and numbers, which are nice. You only have to read one page to know everything.
Yeah. Now all I had to do was go to, it was at page 14 to 16.
That's with the 700 page one.
Right.
The 1000 page one we did this year was, I think, like page 9 or page 4, a little bit earlier.
And then from there, it's a table after table after table after table. Now,
you were still citing,
Page 20.
Page 20,
page 20. Page 20, you know, the reason why that page is my favorite in that report is sort of like, it gives you this, approximate timeline coming from experts of how long this industry takes to reach production phase.
Oh, yeah. It's our magic page.
Look, every time I watch, a politician saying, talking about a different, a much more like exaggerated in terms of closeness of the, of a production phase, I go, okay, fine. I'll still go back to page 20. Now,
That's brutal.
I know. Look,
but it's factual. It's brutal, but factual.
It's one of those hard realities that we have to face.
Exactly.
When were the oil discoveries first made? 2022?
Technically, yeah.
Yeah. Let's be safe and go with 2022.
But the information is also sketchy because we don't actually know. If it's like, what they call that thing? The green lights are there for literally drilling and pumping.
Okay.
Drilling and expansion and drilling and extraction.
Dude, don't bother yourself with that. Mr. Chauvin has been doing this for 30 plus years and he's the one that said, well, that information is a little sketchy.
He doesn't know where it is, where to find it.
After 30 plus years, we're doomed.
He set up Namibia's initial transitional, transitional development plan from pre-independence into the independent Namibian phase.
Yeah.
That led to NDP-1.
He's telling you, I don't know what's going on in the fishing sector.
Where's this particular thing? I don't know what happens here. We don't know about how many diamonds have been produced by Namibia. You can forget about it. Forget about it, guys.
But still attend the consultations. Now, here's the thing. And actually ask those questions. But for you to ask all these questions, you must be familiar with where is the economy coming from historically? What have we done so far? What do we what do we have? What do we not have? Yeah. Now, if you look at from 2020, if we just decide to work with 2022, what you're going to see is that, the exploration phase and appraisal is projected to take somewhere between 2 to 5 years.
Which is the current phase, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you are conservative and then try to find sort of like, play around in the numbers between 2 and 5, then you are looking at 2022 to 2027.
Yeah, that's the maximum, the 5 years.
Yeah, that's the maximum.
The 5 year ends in 2027.
Yeah, that means we're still in all this. Then from there, you would think, now it's production level. We are ready to get that oil. No, it's not.
No.
We still have to wait for another 6 to 8 years of construction. This is when they are setting up the infrastructure, the piping and everything that the oil requires to move from, to move from where it's stored, for example, to an oil tanker. That's just another example. 6 to 8 years.
Yeah.
Now, start from 2027, add maximum 8 years. That's how much time you need, and then you will find.
So that makes it 2035.
That makes it 2035.
Yeah. 2035. That's the maximum, your 8 year period.
That's your 8 year period. That's when you are going to get in production phase.
Yeah.
So, that means.
So we would be waiting for a combined 13 years to see the first barrel lead to any kind of direct payment, meaning us deriving any kind of monetary value from the first barrel.
Let me break it down. For the kids that are born this year, we'll be 13 by the time that we reach production.
They'll be grade 7.
So if anyone tells you that, no, tomorrow we are getting, he's lying.
He's lying. I know I'll be in my 50s.
Man, I've got to start doing this math.
I'm in my 50s.
The bright side, this is where I think I actually, like this whole idea of consultations, which is why, this is the time to basically put all the skills in place and make sure that, when that time comes.
Yeah.
When that time comes, if you are not, at that time nearing retirement, like yours truly here, then.
No, you'll still have like a good 10 years in you, Helmut.
Give or take.
By that time, I'll just have like 6 or 7-ish.
So this whole oil and gas thing.
Yeah.
Skills wise, it's not ours. Now I totally understand the late president when he said the oil is not ours. The good thing is production, depending of course on the available oil in the wells to be exploited, takes somewhere between 20 to 25 years. Yeah, and then you have decommissioning. That's a very controversial part of the oil industry because a lot of companies have a very terrible tendency of just abandoning everything and then putting it. What's that status? What's that? Maintenance.
Care and maintenance.
Care and maintenance, and then they just pack their bags and leave. Now, on paper, it's under care and maintenance, but in reality, these guys are just out of that place, and they're gone.
Yeah.
But we are not there yet.
Mm.
Yeah. So production, the beginning of production is going to start somewhere between 2035.
Of course.
Yeah. So
after 2035.
Yeah. After 2035. Yeah. After 2035.
Yeah.
Now you have to understand these are approximate numbers made by not yours truly here, but the experts in the field.
Those that literally went and analyzed, assessed of known research and information that exists to put up an oil and gas sector in a country that never had oil and gas as a resource to extract.
Mm-hmm.
They could just transport, store, and distribute.
Yep.
Here's another scenario, Hamoud. This is a fun scenario. In between, Namibia could be producing the power to X products, which is everything affiliated to green hydrogen. By 2030, we would be producing these things. For the oil and gas, we would still be waiting 5 years. 5 years.
Yep.
That's a slow train, bruh.
Okay, so,
and by that time, we probably would have replaced TransNamib's locomotives with those hybrid, hydrogen hybrid, locomotives.
No, that's not the math I'm doing. I'm trying to consider whether I should.
No, that's the other math that you should also contemplate to literally move bulk products across Namibia's rail network.
Yeah.
We would have brought in even the technology that uses something.
Okay, but we have our next election in when was it? 2029?
The presidential.
Presidential National Assembly 2029.
Yeah.
That means in 2030 we have a new president.
Yes.
Yeah. That poor guy. Vision 2030. Now anyway. I'll have a lot of questions to answer, I can imagine. Yeah, so you have 2030 to, then the next one is going to be 2024, 2025.
Yeah.
So, we are gonna have, okay, we have this administration, and then you have one that's coming in after between 2030 and 2035. So, the one that's coming in from 2035, all the way to 2040 and above.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that will be running an oil economy.
And in between, we should be, we should be glad, or we should be grateful.
You and I should look into politics, because.
No, well, it's even worse, Helmut. Last night I watched, there's this one YouTube channel I follow, the Infographics Show, where they try to explain developments that have taken place. Apparently, a lot of the world has spent something like 10 or 2 trillion US dollars in arming themselves, on armaments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that.
One factory in the US was measured. It used to run 2 lines of producing bullets, shells.
Yeah.
But it was running at full steam at 7 lines of production, just producing the 155 millimeter shell. It's a shell made for, I think, for tanks and armored vehicles, you know, that shoot up, that have a high caliber, large caliber, firearms on it, you know. And because if you say barrel hammer, it would just it could be you just standing with a little PP shooter and then you've got this massive barrel over there.
That'd be odd.
So I had to say armored car, you know, that has a large caliber gun on it,
mm-hmm.
because it obviously then signals that the barrel is obviously made for the bullet that has to fly out of it.
Mm.
So when this particular resource cited that one statistic, I was like, okay, so the Ukraine conflict for sure. But then its actual hypothesis that it placed there was that the world is technically gearing up for a third world war that no one can afford. Not one country on this planet can afford a full-scale global conflict.
What you have to look at in terms of that scary pictures is the types of weapons you have today.
It's not just that. It's like things...
Everyone is worried about nuclear weapons. I'm worried about biological weapons.
But it's not just that, Hamid. It's moves like, for example, what Donald Trump signed on Sunday or on Friday, changing his Ministry of Defense to Ministry of War. The only time they had that label was pre-World War II.
I'm one of those people when it comes to politics. Yeah. I'm one of those people that very reluctant to think of politics in a way that Donald Trump is this crazy, deranged, billionaire.
Technically not deranged.
He's not deranged. Yeah. At least the way that I think about politics is that more often when a politician, for the most part, not always, but more often when they're making drastic decisions like that, what are his campaign contributors telling him?
Yeah, but the largest ones were obviously the tech guys. What's his name?
Yeah,
Elon Musk.
Exactly. At this point, the question I like to ask myself is, what's in it for Trump or any of his homies out of, of this pro war rhetoric? It's not a secret. I mean, you just gave an example then. War is a very lucrative business, unfortunately, because weapons are not cheap. Military equipment, if you are buying, a piece of equipment and you find it labeled military grade, it's going to, it's going to have an eye-watering price.
Mm.
The question is, what's in it for them?
Yeah.
It's a very reasonable question for anyone to ask, to ask themselves. If you find someone that likes to get into fights, the question you'd be asking is, what do you gain from this? Because no one just like to get in the fight just for the sake of losing their teeth.
And then feeling or getting a few punches.
Yeah. So, it takes me back to, 1930 something, Smedley Butler's, less than 40 pages book, War is a Racket. Now, this is a major general who is basically writing one of the most controversial piece of literature that's ever been written about war, where he points out that, a very sad reality about war that is not faced more often in terms of, in terms of military discourse is that war is a business.
Yeah.
Yeah. The, weapons manufacturing companies have shareholders that want dividends.
Yep.
And, unfortunately, for them to get dividends, more of the products that their companies make must be produced they must produce more and more of it. Now, for something to be, for production to increase, what's being produced must be used somewhere.
Mm.
That's where war zones comes in. And everyone keeps pointing to trigger happy rebel groups popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, they have a lot of equipment to basically do that.
And somehow they have access to money.
How they are moving this money with, you know, in a very strict financial architecture that's been set up to flag what, you know, to flag countries moving money, that's beyond me. Yeah. Once you reach that level of asking questions, it's just a slippery slope away from conspiracy theory. Now, coming back to oil and gas, skills are needed, and this is a very specialty, more like a skills demanding industry.
Mm.
Yeah. Not just because it's very expensive to invest into in terms of basically just general investment, let alone the equipment, but also the safety, environmental safety, the safety of your workforce.
Yeah.
Everything must be guaranteed. Deepwater Horizon, when it went down, was that I think somewhere in 2010. These platforms on average can hold about 120 to 150 individuals.
Yeah.
Now, these are specialized, well-trained, very valuable economic human resources. You just don't want to blow them up into smithereens. So that's why training to ensure that that doesn't happen is a significant part of it. But before that, commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 14 minutes left to the hour of 6, but before continue, let's take a live read.
2026 applications now open with Alvicha University, the Faculty of Health Sciences. Programs available: Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5, Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Level 5, Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8, and Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. For more information, call 061-225-5225-463 or 061-225-462. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever.
Vavitcha University, where everyone can participate in oil and gas. Ah, that's a yeah. So, consultations are being held, although those consultations have a very long name. And
National Upstream Petroleum Local Content Policy
Consultations. Yeah. At least I remembered consultations.
Yeah, I got the first part right, you know.
Yeah.
The whole part of the first
upstream
part.
Upstream Petroleum. You know, that's why I... I shortened it to... Oh, wait. Did I remove that one? I shortened that one to, you know, I shortened it to Opus, and yeah, then it didn't work out. It's like, you know what, I don't want to bite my tongue.
Yeah.
These consultations, the main key, the key goal here, or one of the most important key that they would like to accomplish from the look of things, is that to look at the skills available for an ordinary Namibian to participate in that sector.
Mm.
And what can be done to make sure that by the time that the said participation, is available, at least you have upskilled those ones that that were qualified to be upskilled, so that they can participate, and also to to sort of like make it clear that even if you don't have you don't have an advanced degree in petroleum engineering, you can participate in the industry in a different way, albeit in albeit indirectly, like being stationed there, and then you start giving these engineers a haircut, for example. I didn't think of it.
Yeah, true. Until they beat you up, and then you cease with that behavior.
Well, you're just giving them haircuts. But they don't have to look nice. They're going to the scene.
Yeah, but now they're going to ask you for dodgy designs and dodgy, looks and feels. And
When I was diving, there's this fish that I saw. I want a haircut like that fish. Dude, you're the only one that saw the fish.
Okay, Helmut, you're not going far.
Yeah.
Usually I think that's a fisherman's joke, not
diving guys. Yeah. No.
I'm joking. If anyone's a fisherman, I'm sorry guys. I'm sorry. It was a joke without sauce in it. I'll add more sauce next time.
Yeah. So, let's look at indirect benefits, for example.
Yeah.
What are other benefits of indirect, benefits in terms of the oil and gas sector? I think that also can be a part of tech, for example, what is the green hydrogen sector. Now, the thing is, look, I discovered a couple of months ago that to host a Formula One game is not cheap.
Not a game, Helmut. It's a race.
A race is not cheap. Now, first of all, they have to move. Obviously, they have a bunch of people. Is it a pit stop crew? So they basically have to hire transport services to do that, to help them move their equipment.
Not necessarily.
DHL is one of them.
Yeah, DHL is the global partner, so they would obviously tap into the local DHL presence, because it's a strategic contract that they obviously have with F1, the F1 body itself, who's in control of the rights. So the transport scenario would obviously already be there.
Yeah.
The downside is you need the storage for the car. You should, what's that agency's name? Agency like Namra shouldn't be pulling its funny, antics at the airport and at the ports of entry, in terms of, what are these things in these boxes? Are you trying to come and impact our local manufacturing? And then you don't even have an assembly plant in Namibia anymore to debate upon that.
Now, look, okay, please.
And you should at least, like you said, the hosting is a good, I think, like 10 to 20 million that you should put down on the table. Just to get into the, to be one of the successful proposals.
Yeah.
When it US, comes, not Namibian dollar.
Oh, yeah, that's where we leave the WhatsApp group.
That's where we get kicked out of the WhatsApp group. That's where we get
kicked, admin is like, it's sort of like playing video games. And then you request to join a squad. And then when you get there, you are the only one in a bot skin, and everyone has these fancy outfits on. And everyone like, oh, what like, the heck are you doing here?
Is this guy a noob? No, kick this noob.
Yeah, kick this noob. Yeah. That's painful.
I know.
That's why every time I run into someone with a fancy skin, I snipe them like my life depends on it. Now,
okay, so you're one of those other guys, the haters.
They started it. Now, look, when it comes, I think when it comes to indirect employment, we don't, and I think this is a mistake when it comes to looking at sectors in terms of, in a way that they create employment. We look at it, more often when we're talking about the employment that this sector is, creates, we like to look at it, mostly from direct employment. Yeah. But, indirect employment is a very significant part of every industry. Take, for example, if you look at movies like Titanic, for example, you'll be asking yourself, maybe it's just actors that made money. No, construction workers made money from that movie because they have to build the giant, was that a giant swimming pool, and the whole ship from the scratch.
Yeah, those were carpenters, welders.
Exactly. Welders. Yeah, welders made money from a movie.
They had occupational health and safety guys on site. You know, yeah. The guys that...
Those are required.
And then they had the... What's those guys' name? Emergency response teams. If, you know, something goes wrong.
Yeah, they also have those ones.
Yeah. It's a whole local content... It's a whole local content policy and involvement scenario. And that's just from the arts and...
Yeah.
Culture and movie production scene. We're not even there with that sector yet.
I mean, if you just sit there and tell people that, welders made money from the Titanic movie, the first question they would ask is, how? I didn't see anyone welding on that ship.
Well,
No. It's the behind the scene that creates the...
The welder is not the actor, Moss.
Yeah. Like, which part of that scene would he fit? For the millionth time, it's a movie. If it was the truth, and even Jack survived, that's a big debate going on social media right now. Someone asked a very incendiary question that's now sending social media, you know, like Titanic lovers in a downward meltdown spiral, in a type of motion. But let's just say Jack survived.
He could not survive.
Let's just say he survived.
He could not survive.
Let's think like architects here. Let's just imagine gravity doesn't exist.
No, so we need to imagine the laws of thermal dynamics don't exist.
It don't apply.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let's say Jack survived. How long do you think that relationship would have lasted? That question has pissed a lot of people off.
I think it's probably from the gender that loves calling themselves princesses.
I know. I saw someone asked that question. If this, I think that's coming from what movie is this? 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Someone should have said the same thing that, okay, let's face it. If the, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey movie, if that guy was broke, that movie would be a domestic violence case.
That movie would have been a stalking movie.
Let's face it, he's rich. So bottom line, make that money. Movie, forget
that,
the
that
gym.
Movie, that movie would have been an SGBV movie.
There's one that's just worse. There's one that's worse. What's this? 365. It's even, that's, that's a case of kidnapping.
Yeah.
Big time. That's kidnapping and human trafficking, imprisonment, all those. But because, well,
the guy was rich.
He's rich. It's very romantic. Oh yeah, get out of here. Now, you gotta love movies.
Movies. It's our opposite gender. It's our opposite gender.
See, this is why I've, been...
Technicalities are being avoided.
Just because of money.
Just because of money.
Make money. Forget the gym. Six pack is nothing compared to 6 million. What you do with that information is up to you.
Yeah.
So, oil and gas industry, I think when, not just oil and gas industry, I think overall, all the industries or all the sectors that are still sort of like, still in more like a, we're still putting everything together.
Mm.
Yeah. We're still putting everything together. Every time that we think about employment, I think one very important thing that was pointed out in the consultation that was held in Kiekmaswop, which is one of those central to today's show, the consultation that was held in Kiekmaswop. We have to look at it, at employment in all these sectors in a very broad way, not directly like, okay, for me to benefit from this industry, I need to get a job directly in the industry. These people will be having, conferences, for example. You think they're going to have a conference on a platform? Maybe they're going to have those. But if it's one of those that that brings about captains of industry across different sectors and stakeholder engagements,
yeah,
they're not going to have that on a they're not going to have that on a platform.
No, it would be in a fancy hotel.
It would be in a fancy hotel somewhere. That's the tourism benefiting from the industry it's not directly involved in.
Not user caterer.
Yeah, and then you have a waiter somewhere there. You have
lodgings, meaning like accommodation.
A security guard somewhere, most likely Kavango, the gate. Well, and 2 minutes left to the hour of 6.
How did the Kavango security guard get?
If I get excommunicated from the region.
Yeah, you can forget about getting back to Divundu.
Yeah, that's one of those stereotypes that I just listen to and then start laughing. Maybe it's the comedian in me. Now, back in 2023, Taylor Swift was hosting a bunch of shows, and then she needed somehow, I don't know what happened to her to the way that she moved her equipment from one place that she was performing to the next. So she had to hire a fleet of trucks. So a bunch of truck drivers made a killing because she was compensating them handsomely. So, the thing is, when you're listening to a song, it's very easy to narrow it down to just the performer that is just there.
Yeah.
But, behind the scenes, you have, you have the makeup artists, you have the sound engineers and all these things. Now, all these sound guys are working with equipment that need moving from one place to another. Now, after working on project that we're working on, Sounds of Numb. That's where I basically, that's where I was introduced to the behind the scenes, the logistical nightmare that comes with performances. We needed a whole bus and a trailer for equipment. And you have to do that around the country. You have to do that like in 10 different towns across the country.
Yep.
So you have to do all this and where you are going. Yeah, where you are going. You need accommodations for anyone that you are traveling with. And what are they going to eat? Where are they going to eat? Now, the place that you are renting in terms of accommodation, do they also double as an eating establishment? If they don't, where is the nearest eating establishment? All these places, all these things factors into the indirect benefits that comes from a sector.
Yeah.
Now that we are wrapping it up, let's point out just why I think these consultations are important.
No, they are.
I don't know if Donald Trump did consultations on the Hyundai multi-billion dollar investments into Georgia, but someone that works in that factory decided to call the authorities to report undocumented, quote-unquote, South Korean workers. So these authorities, without doing a due diligence, I believe, just decided to storm in and started handcuffing everyone. Now a multi-billion dollar, long-term negotiated presidential-level deal is on the line.
Of course.
Because someone did not think before dialing the authorities. And also, I'm not completely blaming the lady that called ICE. I'm blaming ICE themselves. All they just had to do was sit down. Now, one of those things that were pointed out was that they're avoiding taxes, and of which they said, look, we are not avoiding taxes. We haven't started production. This is a two-phase assembly plant. One phase is completely operational. That part is separate from one that's under construction where these workers are. That's the one that's supposed to be building batteries. It's only going into operation next year. That's when you start talking about all these taxes and stuff. And the reason why, one of the main reason why these over 300 South Koreans are here is because of something called, I'm new to that, because of something called, corporate expansion. When you are expanding building a branch somewhere, you don't just go to that place and then start scratching your head and start going, I wonder if one of these guys is qualified to meet the industry standard that I need my assembly plant to meet. No, you get your seasoned, qualified engineers, not only to build the structure, but also to train the people that will be taking over once operation resumes. And I was there like, And look, it's very nice watching at all these things from here, because
I think it's the reason why Hamoud, this IBS took place last year.
Yeah.
And why the Hyphen guys launched the skills mapping census yesterday. They want to know how many Namibians are there with certain particular skills. And I'm talking about, it's not just about vocational guys. Mm-hmm. It's also us that went to the universities. They want to know how many Namibians are there that can participate.
Yeah.
Because you sit with scenarios like that ICE raid on that Hyundai factory in Georgia. Because it says here, these guys were here apparently for short-term contracts to get the factory up and running.
Yep.
And like you said, some lady went and called.
You should read the comments on any video on social media about that lady. Man, are they cooking they are brying the heck out of her. Now, this is somewhat very interesting. And by the way,
ICE is known for first acting, locking you up, and then exporting you or deporting you.
And then asking questions.
Before anyone has even intervened.
Okay.
So by the time Donald Trump and his South Korean counterpart, what's the guy's name that flew into the US the other day? Before they can even engage, before they were busy engaging, the guy that Donald Trump appointed, the ICE Tsar, the immigration Tsar, what's that guy's name?
Wait, what is Marco Rubio doing?
No, Rubio is the Secretary of State, Rubio. The guy in charge of ICE.
That
law enforcement guy.
That was a diplomatic disaster.
Yeah, but that guy is now just barreling ahead with his officials. Because he's already put those South Korean workers probably on a bus or on a train.
To
be flown to Rwanda.
They were put into chains, literally.
They're probably on a plane already.
What did Donald Trump run on? Let's bring manufacturing. Let's bring jobs to the U.S.
Yeah.
Then he negotiates to bring those jobs to the U.S. And then someone just decided to scratch their heads and then ruin everything with a phone call.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very important to breathe first before, look, I know everyone is blaming, is pointing fingers at that lady, but all my fingers, all 10 of them are going straight to ICE. If the authorities even here in Namibia were to take every anonymous tip that they are given as the hard fact truth and act on it, a lot of people will be suing the Ministry of Home Affairs, Safety and Security over unlawful arrests. This is where you'd think undue diligence now. I'm not an expert at anything South Korea, American world, economic or diplomatic relations. But if there's one thing that a lot of experts are pointing out was that this is a diplomatic disaster.
No, it is.
This is a diplomatic disaster. Not only coming from from an ordinary citizen that, as you can imagine, for all you can imagine, out of the kindness of their heart, thought they were doing, but for some reason, that's still dumb, something patriotic, only to realize that, now you can imagine how pissed off the shareholders are. Now, if they decide to pull out, now a bunch of people are going to lose their jobs. And you can imagine they're not going to be very happy.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like fish rot, but with phones involved. Actually, phones were involved in fish rot.
No, these guys
even more fancier.
These guys were assembling electric vehicles.
Electric vehicles.
And like you said, the battery plant was the second phase.
It's the one that was set to open next year.
Yeah.
One phone call, people. One phone call. That's all it took. Commercial break. Just a break. No commercial.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back, and a thousand apologies for that extended break. This is where Homerun packs the bus and disappears until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station. From yours truly, moi,
and myself, guys. Enjoy the rest of your evening, our company. Stay tuned.